Okay, there was a question about whether a Chapter 13 debtor could rehire an attorney in order to avoid the non-pro-tunk issue. Judge Gargatta, did you want to address that first?
Sure. I think it's worth a try. At least if you're bumping up and a judge is going to strictly enforce what the Supreme Court said in Acevedo, you can try it. Nonetheless, then you got to explain why it is you didn't hire the person in the first place. The other problem you run into is, what did they provide services? They provided services already. How do you deal with that issue? So it's worth a try, but I think you run into some other problems as a result. Brenda, do you want to comment at all on that?
I do. I think there at least is an analysis that needs to be made about attorneys that's a little different from others, because in a Chapter 13 case, just like a Chapter 11 case, the debtor's lawyer starts working often before the bankruptcy case is ever filed. So there is this notion of non-pro-tunk, retroactive approval, if you will, that is already built into the code itself because of the way it works, right? I mean, you're never going to have an order that isn't somewhat retroactive, because they had already done work before the case is filed, and they're asking for blessing for that as well. So it seems to me that the analysis with respect to attorneys is a little different, at the counsels for debtors in particular, is a little different because of just the structure of attorney retention in Chapter 13 or in Chapter 11 cases. So I'm not sure you need to do a rehire kind of thing, but I think the analysis has to be different.
All right. Thank you, Brenda. The next case that I'm going to discuss is on page 20 of your materials. It's Taggart versus Lorenzen. This is an opinion that came out near the end of the term last year. Interestingly, bankruptcy court decisions, a lot of times, I don't know if you all noticed, but they come out with a supermajority. In this case, it was a 9-0 decision. Regrettably, it involved the Ninth Circuit. But the standard was, what is the appropriate standard, as you may recall, to determine whether or not a creditor has violated Section 11 U.S.C. Section 524. The Ninth Circuit had said that contempt, what was the right standard? This case has a really interesting procedural history. The petitioner owned an interest in a business park with two owners who were some of the respondents on the case that went to the Supreme Court, argued that the Taggart had violated the operating agreement for the business park and filed suit in Oregon State Court against the petitioner. Before the trial, the petitioner filed bankruptcy and received the Chapter 7 discharge prior to the trial being concluded. As you all are aware, bankruptcy courts issue generic discharge orders that contain some language regarding what debts are discharged under 523, and then furthermore that the discharge order operates as an injunction under Section 524A2. Nonetheless, after the petitioner received his discharge in the Chapter 7 case, the Oregon State Court granted judgment against the petitioner for violating the operating agreement and granted attorney's fees to the respondent. What's interesting, and I was somewhat surprised by this, in the Ninth Circuit, there is case law out there that says that a discharge order would cover post-petition attorney's fees from a pre-petition lawsuit if the debtor returned to the fray, elected to participate in litigation after the filing for bankruptcy. And it's a Ninth Circuit case called Ibarra at 424 F3rd 1018. The petitioner, having the fees assessed against him, returned to bankruptcy court, arguing that he had not returned to the fray and Ibarra did not apply. As such, the petitioner argued that the Chapter 7 discharge barred the assessment and collection of fees against him. Bankruptcy court disagreed and found that the respondents didn't violate the discharge order and were not in contempt. On appeal to the district court, the district court found that the petitioner had not returned to the fray and remanded the case back to the bankruptcy court. On remand, the bankruptcy court applied a strict liability standard to the respondent's conduct and held the respondents in civil contempt, awarding the petitioner $105,000 in attorney's fees. The respondents this time appealed to the BAP, not the district court, who vacated the sanctions. The Ninth Circuit subsequently affirmed, holding that a creditor's good faith belief that the discharge order does not apply to creditors precludes a finding of civil contempt. The Supreme Court took the matter on cert, began its analysis by noting that the question presented whether what's the proper legal standard a bankruptcy court should hold a creditor in contempt for attempting to collect a debt after the debt after the discharge, using their words, has immunized from collection. The court discussing the historical precedent of civil and injunctive relief, it noted that 524A2 operates as an injunction and the bankruptcy court can issue any order or judgment necessary to carry out those features, invoking civil contempt under Section 105 of the Bankruptcy Code.